Chapter 27. Parts of the world a considerable while before, and some who when they went out knew nothing of an infection, or at least of one so terrible, these came up the river boldly, and delivered their cargoes as they were obliged to do, except just in the 2 months of August and September, when the weight of the infection lying, as I may say, all below bridge, nobody durst appear in business for a while. But as this continued, but for a few weeks, the homeward bound ships, especially such whose cargoes were not liable to spoil, came to an anchor for a time short of the pool, asterisk or freshwater part of the river, even as low as the river Medway, where several of them ran in, and others lay at the Nore, and in the Hope below Gravesend. So that by the latter end of October there was a very great fleet of homeward bound ships to come up, such as the like had not been known for many years. Asterisk that part of the river, where the ships lie up when they come home, is called the Pool, and takes in all the river on both sides of the water, from the Tower to Cuckold's Point and Limehouse. Footnote in the original. Two particular trades were carried on by water carriage all the while of the infection, and that with little or no interruption, very much to the advantage and comfort of the poor distressed people of the city. And those were the coasting trade for corn, and the Newcastle trade for coals. The first of these was particularly carried on by small vessels from the port of Hull, and other places on the Humber, by which great quantities of corn were brought in from Yorkshire and Lincolnshire. The other part of this corn trade was from Lynn, in Norfolk, from Wells and Burnham, and from Yarmouth, all in the same county, and the third branch was from the River Medway, and from Milton, Feversham, Margate, and Sandwich, and all the other little places and ports round the coast of Kent and Essex. There was also a very good trade from the coast of Suffolk with corn, butter, and cheese. These vessels kept a constant course of trade, and without interruption, came up to that market known still by the name of Bear Key, where they supplied the city plentifully with corn, when land carriage began to fail, and when the people began to be sick of coming from many places in the country. This also was much of it owing to the prudence and conduct of the Lord Mayor, who took such care to keep the masters and seamen from danger when they came up, causing their corn to be bought off at any time they wanted a market, which, however, was very seldom, and causing the corn factors immediately to unlade, and deliver the vessels loaden with corn, that they had very little occasion to come out of their ships or vessels, the money being always carried on board to them, and put into a pail of vinegar before it was carried. The second trade was that of coals from Newcastle upon Tyne, without which the city would have been greatly distressed, for not in the streets only, but in private houses and families, great quantities of coals were then burnt, even all the summer long, and when the weather was hottest, which was done by the advice of the physicians. Some indeed opposed it, and insisted that to keep the houses and rooms hot was a means to propagate the temper, which was a fermentation and heat already in the blood, that it was known to spread and increase in hot weather and abate in cold, and therefore they alleged that all contagious distempers are the worse for heat, because the contagion was nourished and gained strength in hot weather, and was, as it were, propagated in heat. Others said they granted that heat in the climate might propagate infection as sultry hot weather fills the air with vermin, and nourishes innumerable numbers and kinds of venomous creatures which breed in our food, in the plants, and even in our bodies, by the very stench of which infection may be propagated. Also that heat in the air, or heat of weather, as we ordinarily call it, makes bodies relax and faint, exhausts the spirits, opens the pores, and makes us more apt to receive infection, or any evil influence, be it from noxious pestilential vapors, or any other thing in the air, but that the heat of fire, and especially of coal fires kept in our houses, or near us, had a quite different operation, the heat being not of the same kind, but quick and fierce, tending not to nourish, but to consume and dissipate all those noxious fumes which the other kind of heat rather exhaled and stagnated than separated and burned up. Besides, it was alleged that the sulfurous and nitrous particles that are often found to be in the coal, with that bituminous substance which burns, are all assisting to clear and purge the air, and render it wholesome and safe to breathe in after the noxious particles, as above, are dispersed and burned up. The latter opinion prevailed at that time, and, as I must confess, I think with good reason. And the experience of the citizens confirmed it, many houses which had constant fires kept in the rooms having never been infected at all, and I must join my experience to it, for I found the keeping good fires kept our rooms sweet and wholesome, and I do verily believe made our whole family so, more than would otherwise have been. But I returned to the coals as a trade. It was with no little difficulty that this trade was kept open, and particularly because, as we were in an open war with the Dutch at that time, the Dutch capers at first took a great many of our coalier ships, which made the rest cautious, and made them to stay to come in fleets together. But after some time the capers were either afraid to take them, or their masters, the states, were afraid they should, and forbade them, lest the plague should be among them, which made them fare the better. For the security of those northern traders, the coal ships were ordered by my Lord Mayor, not to come up into the pool above a certain number at a time, and ordered lighters and other vessels such as the woodmongers, that is, the wharf keepers or coal sellers, furnished, to go down and take out the coals as low as Deptford and Greenwich, and some farther down. Others delivered great quantities of coals in particular places, where the ships could come to the shore, as at Greenwich, Blackwall, and other places, in vast heaps, as if to be kept for sale, but were then fetched away after the ships which brought them were gone, so that the seamen had no communication with the river men, nor so much as came near one another. Yet all this caution could not effectually prevent the distemper getting among the colliery, that is to say among the ships, by which a great many seamen died of it, and that which was still worse was, that they carried it down to Ipswich and Yarmouth, to Newcastle upon Tyne, and other places on the coast where, especially at Newcastle and at Sunderland, it carried off a great number of people. The making so many fires, as above, did indeed consume an unusual quantity of coals, and that upon one or two stops of the ships coming up, whether by contrary weather, or by the interruption of enemies I do not remember, but the price of coals was exceeding dear, even as high as 4 a chalder, but it soon abated when the ships came in, and as afterwards they had a freer passage, the price was very reasonable all the rest of that year. The public fires which were made on these occasions, as I have calculated it, must necessarily have cost the city about 200 chalders of coals a week, if they had continued, which was indeed a very great quantity, but as it was thought necessary, nothing was spared. However, as some of the physicians cried them down, they were not kept alight above 4 or 5 days. The fires were ordered thus. One at the Custom House, one at Billingsgate, one at Queenhithe, and one at the Three Cranes, one in Blackfriars, and one at the Gate of Bridewell, one at the corner of Ludenhall Street and Gracechurch, one at the North and one at the South Gate of the Royal Exchange, one at Guildhall, and one at Blackwell Hall Gate, one at the Lord Mayor's door in Street Helens, one at the West Entrance in 2 Street Paul's, and one at the entrance in 2 Bow Church. I do not remember whether there was any at the city gates, but one at the bridge foot there was, just by Street Magnus Church. I know some have quarreled since that at the experiment, and said that there died the more people, because of those fires, but I am persuaded those that say so offer no evidence to prove it, neither can I believe it on any account whatever. It remains to give some account of the state of trade at home in England during this dreadful time, and particularly as it relates to the manufactures, and the trade in the city. At the first breaking out of the infection there was, as it is easy to suppose, a very great fright among the people, and consequently a general stop of trade, except in provisions and necessaries of life. And even in those things, as there was a vast number of people fled, and a very great number all was sick, besides the number which died, so there could not be above two-thirds, if above one-half, of the consumption of provisions in the city as used to be. It pleased God to send a very plentiful year of corn and fruit, but not of hay or grass, by which means bread was cheap, by reason of the plenty of corn. Flesh was cheap, by reason of the scarcity of grass, but butter and cheese were dear for the same reason, and hay in the market just beyond Whitechapel Bars was sold at £4 per load. But that affected not the poor. There was a most excessive plenty of all sorts of fruit, such as apples, pears, plums, cherries, grapes, and they were the cheaper, because of the want of people. But this made the poor eat them to excess, and this brought them into fluxes, griping of the guts, surfeits, and the like, which often precipitated them into the plague. But to come to matters of trade. First, foreign exportation being stopped, or at least very much interrupted and rendered difficult, a general stop of all those manufactures followed, of course, which were usually brought for exportation. And though sometimes merchants abroad were importunate for goods, yet little was sent, the passages being so generally stopped, that the English ships would not be admitted, as is said already, into their port. This put a stop to the manufactures, that were for exportation in most parts of England, except in some outports, and even that was soon stopped, for they all had the plague in their turn. But though this was felt all over England, yet, what was still worse, all intercourse of trade for home consumption of manufactures, especially those which usually circulated through the Londoners' hands, was stopped at once, the trade of the city being stopped. All kinds of handicrafts in the city, and sea tradesmen and mechanics, were, as I have said before, out of employ. And this occasioned the putting off, and dismissing an innumerable number of journeymen and workmen of all sorts, seeing nothing was done relating to such trades, but what might be said to be absolutely necessary. This caused the multitude of single people in London to be unprovided for, as also families whose living depended upon the labor of the heads of those families. I say, this reduced them to extreme misery. And I must confess it is for the honor of the city of London, and will be for many ages, as long as this is to be spoken of, that they were able to supply with charitable provision the wants of, so many thousands of those as afterwards fell sick and were distressed. So that it may be safely averred, that nobody perished for want, at least that the magistrates had any notice given them of. This stagnation of our manufacturing trade in the country would have put the people there to much greater difficulties, but that the master workmen, clothiers, and others, to the uttermost of their stocks and strength, kept on making their goods, to keep the poor at work, believing that soon as the sickness should abate they would have a quick demand in proportion to the decay of their trade at that time. But as none, but those masters that were rich could do thus, and that many were poor and not able, the manufacturing trade in England suffered greatly, and the poor were pinched all over England by the calamity of the city of London only. It is true, that the next year made them full amends by another terrible calamity upon the city, so that the city by one calamity impoverished, and weakened the country, and by another calamity, even terrible to of its kind, enriched the country, and made them again amends, for an infinite quantity of household stuff, wearing apparel, and other things, besides whole warehouses filled with merchandise, and manufactures such as come from all parts of England, were consumed in the fire of London the next year after this terrible visitation. It is incredible what a trade this made all over the whole kingdom, to make good the want, and to supply that loss. So that, in short, all the manufacturing hands in the nation were set on work, and were little enough for several years, to supply the market and answer the demands. All foreign markets also were empty of our goods by the stop which had been occasioned by the plague, and before an open trade was allowed again, and the prodigious demand at home falling in, joined to make a quick vent for all sort of goods, so that there never was known such a trade all over England for the time as was in the first 7 years after the plague, and after the fire of London. It remains now that I should say something of the merciful part of this terrible judgment. The last week in September, the plague being come to its crisis, its fury began to assuage. I remember my friend Dr. Heath, coming to see me the week before, told me he was sure that the violence of it would assuage in a few days, but when I saw the weekly bill of that week, which was the highest of the whole year, being 8297 of all diseases, I upbraided him with it, and asked him what he had made his judgment from. His answer, however, was not so much to seek as I thought it would have been. "Look you," apostrophe says he, "by the number which are at this time sick and infected, there should have been 20,000 dead the last week instead of 8,000, if the inveterate mortal contagion had been as it was 2 weeks ago, for then it ordinarily killed in 2 or 3 days, now not under 8 or 10, and then not above 1 in 5 recovered, whereas I have observed that now, not above 2 in 5 miscarry. And, observe it from me, the next bill will decrease, and you will see many more people recover than used to do, for though a vast multitude are now everywhere infected, and as many every day fall sick, yet there will not so many die as there did, for the malignity of the distemper is abated," adding that he began now to hope, nay, more than hope, that the infection had passed its crisis, and was going off. And accordingly so it was, for the next week being, as I said, the last in September, the bill decreased almost 2,000. It is true the plague was still at a frightful height, and the next bill was no less than 6460, and the next to that, 5720. But still my friend's observation was just, and it did appear the people did recover faster, and more in number than they used to do. And indeed, if it had not been so, what had been the condition of the city of London? For, according to my friend, there were not fewer than 60,000 people at that time infected, whereof, as above, 20,477 died, and near 40,000 recovered. Whereas, had it been as it was before, 50,000 of that number would very probably have died, if not more, and 50,000 more would have sickened. For, in a word, the whole mass of people began to sicken, and it looked as if none would escape. But this remark of my friend's appeared more evident in a few weeks more, for the decrease went on, and another week in October it decreased 1843, so that the number dead of the plague was but 2665, and the next week it decreased 1413 more, and yet it was seen plainly that there was abundance of people sick, nay, abundance more than ordinary, and abundance fell sick every day but, as above, the malignity of the disease abated. Such is the precipitant disposition of our people, whether it is so, or not all over the world, that's none of my particular business to inquire, but I saw it apparently here, that as upon the first fright of the infection they shunned one another, and fled from one another's houses, and from the city with an unaccountable, and, as I thought, unnecessary fright, so now, upon this notion spreading, viz., that the distemper was not so catching as formerly, and that if it was catched it was not so mortal, and seeing abundance of people who really fell sick recover again daily, they took to such a precipitant courage, and grew so entirely regardless of themselves, and of the infection, that they made no more of the plague than of an ordinary fever, nor indeed so much. They not only went boldly into company with those who had tumors, and carbuncles upon them that were running, and consequently contagious, but ate and drank with them, nay, into their houses to visit them, and even, as I was told, into their very chambers where they lay sick. This I could not see rational. My friend Dr. Heath allowed, and it was plain to experience, that the distemper was as catching as ever, and as many fell sick, but only he alleged that, so many of those that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.